Good morning, everyone. My name is Marcos Olatoye, and actually I'm a graduate student in Kansas State University, so I'm not yet a PhD holder, and I count it all privilege standing here today on this symposium where people who have advanced in their careers have presented earlier. So this morning, I will be talking with you on the genomic dissection of panicle architecture trees in sorghum using the nested association mapping population. Now, these pictures clearly illustrate to us the different inflorescence structures we have in our five majorly cultivated cereals. And as we all know, this inflorescence is the primary reproductive structure that determines our seed, which gives us our yield. Now, for example, in the evolution of barley, now, a mutation in a two-row inflorescence architecture type in barley to a six-row barley inflorescence type led to a threefold increase in yield. And recently in sorghum, there's a gene mutation called the MSD, which scientists from Lubbock, who are also represented here today, developed. Now, this mutation also led to an increase in the number of seeds per panicle, which tells us how relevant our inflorescence architecture type is for yield. Now, in sorghum, the story gets a little bit higher than this. Now, the inflorescence also perform what we call agroclimatic adaptation. And what do I mean by this? Now, when you go to the dryland regions, you often find these compact panicle-shaped types of sorghum that are naturally adapted to these dryland regions. And when you go to the humid regions, you often find the loose panicle-shaped types like this. Now, but the challenge that farmers have with planting the open panicle types, now this open panicle types is a form of adaptation to high humid regions. Now what it does is it allows air to blow through the panicles, thereby reducing mold infection, and mold destroys the quality of yield in sorghum by close to 50%. Now, so farmers in humid regions often prefer an intermediate, that is like a semi-compact panicle type. Now, the question is, how do we breed for specific architecture types that are adapted to different agroclimatic zones for our farmers without bringing along undesirable traits like small seeds and also deeply pigmented seeds, which are not relevant? So when Dr. Thompson was talking earlier, I talked about marker-assisted selection. Now, for us to employ marker-assisted selection to overcome this challenge, we need to understand the genetic architecture of the trait. Now, genetic architecture in terms of how many QTLs controls this trait, what are the effect sizes of these QTLs, and what are the allelic frequency of these QTLs. Now, the objective, this brings us to the objective of my own study, which is like to characterize the genetic architecture of three important traits in the sorghum inflorescence. For example, the rachis length, the upper primary branch length, and the lower primary branch length. Now, these three features of the sorghum inflorescence determine the number of seeds you have in your panicle. At the same time, they perform agroclimatic adaptation functions. Now, in this study, we use the nested association mapping population. Now, the nested association mapping population combines the advantages of biparental mapping population with the association diversity panel. Now, it exploits both the meiotic recombination, which you have in the F1 over here, because it is a cross between a common parent with 10 diverse parents. So in total, we have 2,500 recombinant hybridized at the F4 generation. So what this does is this meiotic recombination combined with the historical recombination between the diverse founders gives us a higher mapping resolution for QTL detection. Now, at the same time, we all know that population structure can be a challenge when you're performing association mapping. Now, at this F1 generation, you are breaking down any unnecessary population structure that is associated with agroclimatic traits which you are trying to map. And at the same time, this increases the frequency of low-frequency alleles that are present in your population to a moderate level for a higher statistical power for mapping. And the picture here shows the origin of all the diverse founders that were used in development of this population. Now, for our analysis, we perform genotyping by sequencing, which is the process in which you develop markers from your DNA. And at the end of our pipeline, we found 100,000 markers. Now, we use these 100,000 markers with our phenotypic trait measurement using multi-locus mixed models for genome-wide association studies, and also for joint leakage mapping, which employs stepwise regression, your forward selection and the backward selection together, and also family mapping. Now, another advantage of the NAM is this. Apart from dissecting the entire population as a whole, you can also dissect each individual family to see whether there are different genetic architectures that are underlying the traits you are trying to analyze. And also we performed cross validation using the ridge regression. Now, what we did is we randomly sampled 80% of the population without replacement, and use that using the genomic information and the phenotypic trait information to predict the phenotype of 20% of the population used in multiple cycles. Now, the picture here shows us the phenotypic distribution of our traits. Now, on the left-hand side is the rachis length, and on the right-hand side is the lower primary branch length. Now, the black dot here is a trait value for the common parent that was used in development of this population, and this red dot in each of this group tells you the trait value for each of the other diverse parents. Now, as we can see, there's a form of transgressive variation within each of these families, and this shows us that it is possible to exploit heterosis when breeding for this type of trait in sorghum. This plot on the left hand side now, each level of this plot tells you the chromosome in sorghum. Now we have 10 chromosomes, so from level 1 to level 10, from chromosome 1 to chromosome 10. On the y-axis, we have the log of the p-values. Now the higher the negative log of the p-values, the higher the association between your QTL and the trait you are measuring. And on the y-axis, on the x-axis, we have the physical distance that tells you the position of each QTL. Now, QTLs that are triangular shaped are those ones associated with the rachis length. Those ones that are the open diamond shape are those associated with the upper primary branch length. And the ones that are solid circle are the ones associated with the lower primary branch length. And we found significant QTLs all across the 10 chromosomes for these three different traits. And at the same time, now one challenge with mapping in sorghum is we are behind crops like rice and maize in terms of genetics. And we were able to find QTLs that have been reported in the rice and maize to be associated with inflorescence development. Now, for example, the UCA5. Now, in maize, an autolog of this particular gene, a mutation in this gene, led to a drastic reduction in primary branch length. And this particular gene is called the flavin monooxygenase gene. Now, it is a particular determinant in the auxin biosynthesis in cereals. And this tells us that this is really like a big step forward in mapping for this type of traits using the nested association mapping population. Now, this plot on the left-hand side shows us the distribution of the effect of the QTLs we found to be associated with our panicle traits. Now, we can see that most of the QTLs, now, on the y-axis there is the number of QTLs, and on the x-axis we have the proportion of variance explained by each of the QTLs. Now, we found that for two of our traits, majority of the QTLs were low effect QTLs, and only a few, maybe like one or two, are major effect QTLs. Now, this can give us an information about the evolutionary pattern behind the development of this inflorescence in sorghum. For example, in maize, they found major effect QTLs. And as we know in maize, now, using the theory of canalization, which says that the rapidly evolving traits are often controlled by fixed effects. Now, in our own situation where we're having majorly low effect QTLs, now this tells us that these traits might have evolved earlier in sorghum. It may not be a recent evolution. And also the distribution of the allele frequencies. Now, in association mapping, now most of our locally adapted alleles often come in form of very low frequencies. And using the nested association mapping, we're able to map this type of alleles that may be contributing to specific adaptation in different regions. And on the far right here, we have the plot that shows us the number of QTLs we found for each of our traits. For example, for the rachis length, we found like 45 QTLs. For the lower primary branch length, we found like 39 QTLs. And for the upper primary branch length, we found like 49 QTLs to be affecting the trait. Now, as I said earlier, that we performed individual mapping within each of the populations that makes up the sorghum NAP. Now, in a family that has the compact panicle architecture type, another family that has the loose panicle architecture type, now, we found QTL peaks in similar regions. And at the same time, we found QTL in different regions of these different families. Now, this may signify that there may be different genetic architectures that underlie the development of this inflorescence within different families. And one thing I should have also said earlier is In Sorghum, we have five major racial classes. And these racial classes were characterized earlier based on their panicle architecture types. And we can see from the genetics part that this seems to be true, that different genetic architectures may underlie these different racial groups based on their panicle architecture. For our cross-validation, which is the correlation between our observed trait value and the predicted trait value. Now, for the Reckitt's length, we find a higher correlation of 0.75, which is fairly high, and also for lower primary branch length. And this tells us the possibility of performing genomic prediction or selection for panicle types in sorghum. Now, in summary, it is clear to us that if we want to perform marker-assisted selection, that that may not really be the exact approach to use. We can use like genomic prediction methods, because most of the QTLs controlling our traits are low effect QTLs. And studies have shown that when you use genomic prediction, there are certain models that incorporate known markers, known QTLs as fixed effects in genomic prediction models. This type of models often predict better than normal prediction models that does not account for fixed effects using known QTLs. And also, the genes that we have identified to be associated with inflorescence in sorghum can provide the pedestal for further studies to characterize how truly these genes shape the inflorescence type in sorghum. And in summary, it is clear to us that genomic-enabled breeding for adaptation and yield using the panicle architecture type in sorghum is possible. I would like to appreciate my professor, Dr. Geoffrey Morris, members of my committee, my colleagues in the lab who really helped me to phenotype, because it's really a big population, 2,500 lines in five environments. So it really took us a long time. The undergrads that worked with me in getting this done. And also, thank you for your attention and questions, please. My own work is not really focused on counting them off. We have other people that are working on this, because as I said, the NAM is a really big population. But Dr. Pat Brand, who first worked on this mapping for inflorescence type in sorghum, found a good correlation between the length of the primary branch and the number of the primary branch and the total number of seeds you have in the panicle. So there's a higher positive correlation between the length of the branches and the number of branches you have. Yes, you're right.
So anyway, the next question is, what are the functions? So moving forward, you should be able to identify functional SNPs, probably that will allow you to be predictive for which type of inflorescence, the panicle architecture that you have. So maybe that's one possible application.
Yes, you're right. Yes, thank you so much. And one of the other things I'm trying to do now is I'm trying to perform a population genomic analysis using a panel from West Africa. Now, Africa happens to be the center of diversity of sorghum. And this panicle architecture type also varies from one climatic region to the other. So what I'm trying to do is the SNPs that I have mapped in this particular population, let's see how distributed they are across different agroclimatic zones. Do we really have a pattern, or we are just mapping things that may not really be representative? So this is also another way we are trying to see how this might have influenced adaptation over time, and also help us understand the future too.
So one problem with genotype by sequencing is you get a lot of these little QTLs of minor effect. How are you planning to confirm whether they're real QTL or just...
Well, thank you so much for the question. Now, association mapping, you can have synthetic associations, which will be not the real QTL you have. Now, one advantage of using the NAM is this. The cross we made in the F1 brings the frequency of this very low QTS to a significant level for mapping. And because we've already filtered like 0.1% for like 0.05 manual left frequency, so anyone that will be associated with errors, those ones have been removed. So we are kind of confident that whatever we have here will truly, there's a higher chance that it is associated with our traits. And at the same time, population structure has been broken down, which unlike the diversity panel, which might have given us spurious alleles. So putting all this into consideration, also in our models, we accounted for the family effect. So all this really reduces our chances of having those spurious and associations that might be caused by the low frequency. So whatever association we have here that is low frequency, there's a higher chance that it might be associated with the trace.
All right, well, let's thank this morning's session speaker again.